Testataan. Kuuluuko sinne taakse? Tuleeko tästä mikistä? Hyvä. Okay, let's start. So, welcome to the second XML lecture. I'll be doing this in English since we have some foreign students involved. So, as you might remember, we are recording these lectures for, so you might watch them later from home. But of course, we recommend that you are here for the lectures and especially in the demo sessions that won't be recorded. Those are interactive, and you might not get too much out of it if you watch the recording. But yeah. Hi, well, nice to see you all. My name is Henri Pirkkalainen. I'm here a postdoc researcher, now been working here for something like 6 years. And I've been holding this XML course with Philip for some years now. Tony came to help us out, this Tony Taipalus, who will be handling the demo sessions. He came to help us out a couple of years earlier. This used to be organized in a bit different way, as you might have heard from Philip, that there was the theory and the practical side were kind of distributed. So we had a separate, like, theoretical parts of XML, how it's used in organizations, and then a kind of a XML lab course. But this wasn't very helpful. At least for me, I did this course something like 10 years ago as a student, and it was quite hard to remember all the basics then, like, let's say, a few months later when you're doing the lab course. So now we want to do this very, very much aligned, so that in today's lecture we are going to look at some of the very basics of XML, and then next week the first demo session is going to take place, and what you will be hearing about today will kind of get you through those demo or the assignments, at least hopefully. Something on the course structure still. So these couple of first times will be revolved around the very, very basics, around the logical structure of XML. So there are only few rules actually that this, because if we look at XML as kind of a set of rules that people can use to develop their own languages from, those rules are rather simple, and they mainly tell something about the structure, what XML document should have. And this logical structure is exactly the main part of XML. And the two times after this, we will be looking still at the logical structure of XML. We will be going to this something that's called the document type definition only in the follow-up lectures. That's more or less when you put the grammar around the XML documents. And the third demo session will be only incorporating this DTD. These first two demo sessions are of the very basics around the well-formedness and just getting a good structure for your XML documents. On week 47, we are going to be looking at a bit putting some external presentation to XML documents so that you can actually display it on a browser. And we'll be discussing one particular language that's called the Extensible Stylesheet Language, XSL. And we will be looking at the physical structure of XML that kind of gives you the opportunity to use XML documents as some kind of a containers for other types of graphics, images, videos, whatsoever. So, but there lies some problems in the utilizing the physical structure, so we'll be also looking at some of those downsides from it. Then we'll be having two visiting lectures that more give some kind of a better impression how to use XML in practice in work life. So first session is going to be on week 48, when Ville Seppänen, who's also a lecturer here, will be talking about XML as a data interchange language, so how different systems can actually discuss with each other using XML. And the fourth demo session will actually, the extra assignment, where you can get the extra points, deal with this data interchange with something that's called SOAP. So try to get into these visiting lectures. I think these are very interesting and show a bit of a variety and go a bit from the basics to the real life. And the second visiting lecture, Joni Kettunen from Digia will come and discuss about his... He has a quite long work history in different types of projects, from some like web development, but also in very, very different types of industries, and for public sector, but also for private sector. Like, and he will be discussing quite lots of different types of examples, how he has been using XML in his work, but also on a kind of a management level. What if you later on, even if you don't become a developer or anything, I think Joni's lecture will give you some kind of idea to which extent you should know about these things when you're, let's say, in a management position. Or will you all... Are you thinking about becoming developers? Maybe if someone is a developer or planning to become one, maybe you can raise your hand. It would be just nice to know a bit the structure of these lectures. Okay. That's good. That's enough. If it says in LinkedIn, that's the truth. Okay, so more or less these few weeks, this will be rather intensive, but... I hope you will get quite lots of information from this and some practical, let's say, feeling towards XML, because as Philip also discussed, that XML is only a kind of a meta language that you derive some particular languages for presenting documents, let's say, in a organizational, let's say, document management. You might, for web development, you might use it as a kind of a development language, but also you might use XML only to describe some metadata of some information. So there are big variety, but when you are looking at any XML language that's derived from this set of rules, the basics are always the same. And the two basic rules for XML will be discussed in this lecture. Those are called the well-formedness rules and validity rules of XML. And if you remember these couple of things and you remember them well, I think most parts of the course will be rather easy for you. But just to remind, did everyone get the access to Optima? Is somebody who didn't get access to Optima? If there any problem, maybe you can contact us after this lecture. But more or less all the course readings are there. So after each lesson, as Philip told, we will be pointing out some of the recommended readings. I think mainly what you will be seeing on the slides and the examples, they will be kind of enough, but especially towards the exam, I really recommend to take a peek on these issues that we'll point out always in the last slides of each lecture. And this book that we have selected is available to this... address. You can find it and the slides it also through Optima. There are a couple of additional readings like XML in 10 points, and so that those are pretty nice ones to read. And the recordings will be in Moniviestin. They are available maybe the next morning afterwards, so you can find them there. And as I said, the demo sessions will be interactive and not recorded. Has somebody already started with the assignments? Has everyone seen the assignments? Or anyone that hasn't opened up the assignments document? I could just very briefly show you what that is about. This goes as a bit of a... Wait, I'll need to get online first. But again, the assignment, they should be linked in Optima already. And as you might remember, you can do this as a group assignment as well. But just make sure, because I think we witnessed that every single year, that you really need to get your, let's say, your hands dirty yourself also. Like, even if you're doing it a group, make sure that you understand what goes into these assignments. Because otherwise, you will have a hard life in, let's say, in the exam. But if you do this, try out these exercises, assignments, even get the additional points, the actual exam will be very easy for you. Okay, there seems to be something with the internet access that it's not very much stable, but okay, now we're getting in. And During these lectures, I'll be showing some of the examples in this Eclipse environment. We have recommended that you, if you want to play around like with these documents during the lectures, we recommend installing one of these tools for yourselves. I'm a Mac user, so I don't have, access to, for example, this Notepad++, but the Eclipse is available for you Mac users as well, and in the slides there's the actual link where you can download the package with the XML tools involved, and that's, very, very helpful. But okay, there's the link to the lecture recordings, but in terms of course materials, every single time we'll have the this slide sets here. And for this lecture, also these few examples are uploaded as well. But don't do this. I mean, as you will see in this during this course, XML is just like includes these tags where the primary content is inside, and it's not given any kind of external presentation. So when you click on an XML document, put it to your web browser, it tries to interpret it and visualize it. So there's nothing to visualize. It's just text. So this is what you will get. So in order to work with this, you can here press the symbol here and download the under Objektin Hallinta. I think if you are using an English version, it says something like operation tools or similar, and then you can just press Tallenna or save and get it the local copy of it, of these examples. And these are, remember, these are all only examples. These are not the assignments that you will be working with. And if you are, for example, using Eclipse, it looks like something like this, and this is actually the example that I just downloaded. When you have installed the package, you can find some XML examples already included there, but you can just create your own, a new folder there, and simply when you have this downloaded, you can just drag and drop the document to the folder and then open it here. And as you can see, this is exactly what the web browser was trying to interpret, and because it's just text. It shows only this what is included in the so-called elements. So in these first lectures, we aren't going to be looking at any kind of external presentation, how we can visualize something, some poem like this in a web browser, because that's not the key issue here. The main issue is the how you mark up these documents, how you can give a proper grammar around it, and then use it in any context that you are actually working with. No matter if it's something to present on a web browser, but if you're in an organization, doing some kind of a, knowledge management or document management, you might need to control big loads of different types of documentation. And then this kind of a rules that you have set for your documents become very, very important, so that different systems can interact with each other, and there's always some kind of a structure that is kind of agreed on. But more about that in this lecture, but also in the follow-up ones. So, okay, those you can find in Optima, and also the assignments should be here. Assignments, and there you go. So, again, there are four assignments. The first couple of ones are the basics. Then we are discussing something about putting this grammar around the documents with the DTD. Should be rather straightforward. But what we really recommend is get those extra points, because I mean, when you get this the basics done, so the mandatory assignment, just put up 1 hour or something extra to get this extra pointer, so you can get the best grade possible from this course, and of course lots of practical experience around it. So some of these assignments include something like a tree structure, and you have to do an XML document out of that. So this is something that we'll discuss today in this lecture. And some of these might require a bit more thinking, but let's say if some of you already have some background in any kind of a development or even something like HTML, it might be that these are rather simple for you. Is there someone who has looked at these and thought that they are rather easy? Anyone?
Contrary.
Sorry?
The contrary.
We promise that we will support you as much as possible to get through this assignment. So during these lectures, these examples that we will use, they are rather close to the assignments of the next week. And also, like we have discussed this with Tony in a way that if you just can't get the document, for example, if it's something like you have to make an XML document out of it and then use the World Wide Web validator to, so that you copy-paste the code there and see if it works or not. And if you just can't get to work, we have discussed in a way that we might have some, like, you send what you have to Tony before the deadline, and then we'll discuss then before or after the session, the demo session, then in detail how to correct it. Because, I mean, if you have put a lot of effort and also we can see it, Tony can see it, there's no problem. We'll help you to get through it. So, and I promise, not like if you look at this some for the first time, they might be rather confusing. But when you get a couple of the first like examples or the basics in your mind, it will get much easier. But let's go now straight to the point. So. Get some tool. I think this Notepad++ for PC users is pretty good, but Eclipse is also more advanced one, so you might use it also in some other courses during your studies. So, but bringing your own device is rather recommended. Then actually quite big remark is that some of the tools, like for Notepad++, you can get some kind of a plugin for validating the documents, because as you might remember that you always have to, in those assignments, show like the validated document, that you have to use the World Wide Web's consortium validator. So some of these, like Notepad++, don't actually validate. They only look at the first rule. If we think that there's this, what I'll be discussing in the next 30 minutes is this well-formedness rules and validity rules. The validity rules should be like including both, but in Notepad++ it only checks for the structure. It doesn't look at your document against the DTD, so it uses the term validate in a wrong manner. So if you are getting Notepad++, use World Wide Web with this consortium's validator online to check your documents. So that's something that we have learned in the past, that the many of the platforms, they use the term validate in a very, very different way. Okay, but then just a couple of words. I don't want to make this any kind of a history lesson or anything, but just like that the why XML actually came to be before we go to the very basics is that, okay, in the 60s you might know this ARPANET and the birth of internet architecture, so more or less that it was built for universities to discourse with each other and exchange information. But very, very soon afterwards, there was a need to define some kind of some big classes of documents, let's say for technical documentation or something similar. And this SGML was created, that is kind of the father and mother and anything of XML. So it's kind of it was where XML was derived from. And already in the 80s, this something called the document type definition, this DTD, was created for this SGML. But this SGML was a big, big monster. It was very, very hard to manage. And especially when the World Wide Web was created, there was all like straight away some, let's say, big amounts of people, like developers, but different types of communities, organizations, who wanted to develop something for themselves. And this SGML was very, very hard to grasp. I mean, it was I don't know how many hundreds and thousands of pages of documentation that was very, very hard to follow. And you needed something very simple, very, very simplified, that if you are creating, let's say, a language for defining, let's say, a set of poems or whatsoever, this XML was made in a very, very simple manner, that if you just follow a couple of specific rules, then you are kind of in the right way, and you can extend your language then as far as you want to. For like Philip was giving some examples for this vector graphics or similar, the rules are always the same. I mean, the basics are the same there. But of course, it depending on the topic area, on the where you are applying XML, it might get from very simple to very like hard or complicated. But the main thing was that HTML was way too hard for anyone to actually apply. Then you needed something simple, and XML was that simple solution there that was created. Actually, HTML, so if you are looking at like web browsers or browsing in the web, this HTML was derived from HTML originally, and it's something that we more or less use still every day when we're browsing online. But then XML is something that's was derived from HTML, and for example, XHTML, which was more, let's say, a rigid or valid version, was created out of that. And different types of application areas, like presenting math formulas on a web browser or vector graphics or similar, these are all derived from the same basic rules of XML. So more or less, if you're thinking about nowadays, we'll go further in this in the sixth lecture, but if you're thinking about like as a user of any kinds of social media services or anything, you're actually all the time consuming many, many different types of XML-based languages that are there. They have made the web very, very interactive, and let's say big part of the we're using all kinds of devices that are actually exchanging information like with each other, with different types of databases, and so on all the time. And XML is one of the key like facilitators of this kind of. We are the consumers. We don't have to care about where this all comes from, but it's good to remember that XML was one of the main things why we're actually so evolved nowadays in all kinds of web development related standards and methods. Okay, let's go to the some of the examples. So still on a kind of a, if we're thinking about on a larger scale where XML is used, the three key issues that we'll discuss in this lecture is something like XML as a document format, so to give structure for big classes of documents. The second one is to describe metadata, Philip was giving this one example of learning materials that you can find online to this Open Scout-like portal. All the metadata about the learning materials, so the author, which educational level it was, and so on, all of this information is described in XML documents. So as a metadata format, it's very, very much applied. And the third component, the format for data interexchange between software applications and systems, that's the last part that we'll discuss slightly less, but especially in this visiting lectures of Joni and Ville. Okay, first things first. So if we think about the XML as a kind of a small rule set, XML itself is extensible. This is actually what is good if you can get this very, very fast into your mind that when you're using any kind of XML language, you aren't using XML. You are using a particular language that is created by this small set of rules. Any kind of language that you are, even if it has the .xml, you are using a particular XML language that is created from this set of rules. So this XML specification where these rules are set does not specify anything about what kind of element names or attribute names, what kind of structures you have. It just gives a couple of pointers how you should do it. And later on in the lectures, we can open up a bit this XML specification. It's kind of a document that tells all of this in one website. But of course, it looks much more complicated than it actually is. But this extensibility is something that we'll discuss quite much in the next lectures. And then we come to the number one rule of XML. It's something called the well-formedness rules. So for you to think about that, there are two key rules in XML. Well-formedness rules that are for all XML documents out there, And then there's something like validity rules for those documents that have the grammar, the DTD included in those. Those are the key two things. Let's now dig into the first one. They are rather simple. So this well-formedness rules only includes two parts. If we have an element, let's say here the date, each element must have a beginning and an end tag. Sometimes you might have something called empty elements, but that's for later. But first things first, each element, beginning and an end tag. Here in this, let's say if I can use some pointer, or can I have some? No? I was wanting to draw something. Okay, but anyways, if you look here at this date, between these brackets, you have the element. This is one element, this date here. And if we have a start tag for an element like this, it must have an end tag as well. The end tag is done in this way, like where you have the slash symbol involved. But as you can see here, actually it doesn't have the slash symbol, so it doesn't close. It opens here, but it never closes. This document wouldn't be well-formed, and it would be terminated. This wouldn't be handled at all. And this is one of the key issues in XML, that these couple of rules always must be complied, because otherwise if there's some errors like this, it kind of terminates, if particular software applications are sending information back and forth, and there are errors like this, you can't really do much about it. Then some information will be lost, and it might be for the end user or for the company. There will be some problems. Okay, that's the first one. The second one is the elements must be properly nested, so that if a start tag of an element is in the content of another element, it has to end there as well. So if we have a date element, okay, let's show in this one. This is maybe because this gives a bit more structure into it. This is an XML document that describes a poem. The declarations start the first line, ignore for now. But if we look at here, just the poem element, which is the root element, it has a start tag and it has an end tag. And the second rule was that if there is an element starting inside, before this poem closes, if there starts an element, it must also close inside of it. So these must be always properly nested. This is the second rule. So, for example, if I would here take this author, this end tag, and drag it under this stanza here, you might imagine that it wouldn't work. I'll demonstrate this straight away. So it's very easy kind of I would take that away and I would put it behind this one. Okay, in Eclipse it directly tells that, okay, there's a problem, because Eclipse supports also XML development, so it tells something of this kind of errors immediately. But these couple of rules, it always tells in this way that there's the validation was completed, there was one error involved, and it tells the problems here. It's very specific in a way. You can do some of these like in Notepad, but of course you aren't, let's say, in a very simple Notepad, but it won't give you the errors. So if you're using an environment like this, it's very easy kind of to spot where the problems lie. So it just says here that the element type stanza must be terminated by the matching end tag stanza. So as you can see, this here is the problem. I mean, we just changed the place from here, and we broke down the proper nesting. So if this, if we put this back to where it was, then we're back to fine. So these two, actually these rules, if you get these right and get these in your head like very early on, the most of the examples, the assignments will be rather easy for you. Beginning and end tag and properly nested. If the start tag of an element is the content of another, and in the content means that it starts and ends before the parent closes. So as you can see here, if we look at the structure, the poem is the very top element. Then we have under it author, date, title, and then a stanza. And all of these author, date, title, they always close like directly afterwards. So it's very clear that it's how the structure is. But if you're looking at the stanza here, and then the lines go under it, so it's kind of something like a paragraph, the ending must be then after those, all those lines are included. So you can very easily break down the structure, but if you get it right, then there's no problem. Does this clarify these two rules? Is there some, anyone, everything okay for all? And you can just speak out loud. If there's something like unclear or something, just stop me and then we can discuss and try to find a solution together then. And even though XML is something that when you are actually like using XML, sometimes you might not even see some of this source code or something like this. You might be filling out some form or something and all of this will happen in the background. But there are still some kind of a writing conventions. I mean, because in, let's say, in a bigger organization, if you are creating something, it's very likely that somebody else will actually need to get into the XML documents beside you. So there are some kind of a writing conventions that ease up the reading of it. And if we would just be using something like this, it's always ordered to the or the left. It's very, very hard to see this structure in a way. So in that way, as you'll be here, like learning also in the programming courses, that if we give this kind of a structure, it's so much easier to read. Your mind can put it straight away in a structure, and it, you can very soon see if there's some problems with it. Okay, then some of this kind of a trivial thing. So you will always see some kind of XML declaration in the top of the documents. This is not something to scare you or anything, but it just kind of gives the what XML version it's based on. So there have been a couple of different versions of this XML specification out there, and it just kind of gives like what version it's following. And the recommendation is always to have this declaration at the start of document, but in many cases it doesn't matter even if you don't have the declaration in the start. It's something that it's by default there. It tells something on the character encoding, so what characters are applied and what can be used in your document. And then it just tells something like a standalone. What it means that is there a DTD, so is there a grammar included? So if it's a standalone document, it means that it doesn't have a grammar elsewhere. So this is important. So if you use this declaration and you write standalone, yes, and even though you have somewhere else a separate document where what gives the rules for your XML document, you are kind of a, then you might have a problem. But the basic thing is that just to normally don't mess it up. So just leave it as it is in your development tool, whatever you are using. The character set, XML uses Unicode that includes almost all symbols used in natural languages, which is pretty good. And this first version has no limitations, this XML 1.1, so it's always good to have this in your declaration unless you have in a particular organization a long roots of certain type of development and you're, let's say, tied to certain versions. But if you're creating something from scratch, it makes sense to have this 1.1 in there. And this is something to remember. We don't really go to this in these lectures, but even if XML users understand Unicode symbols like A with dots and so on, it doesn't mean that all software applications transmitting your XML documents to might not understand, so some information might be still lost. But this is really not the key issue in these lectures, but it's good to recognize this. So if you look at these two declarations here, they are absolutely the same ones. So even if the longer one tells what the encoding is, and it's not a standalone document, so it might have a grammar elsewhere in a different document. Still, if you would have this smaller or shorter version, it's still the same declaration, because those are there by default, the standalone no and the encoding. So you don't have to really stress too much about this during the course. You can have usually just put this shorter version in with the XML version 1.1 or 1.0. During this course, it won't be a big problem. It's just good to know some of these things. Philip will discuss in the two next lectures on this logical structure of XML, which also includes this grammar aspect, so the DTD. But the main thing is that XML uses these tags as containers of the primary content. So the element is formed by these tags, the beginning and an end tag, and the content inside. And these form the element. So whenever we are discussing elements in these lectures, it always is about this. Start and end tag and primary content inside. And these elements are the key building blocks in XML. You can use something like attributes that we'll discuss later on, but this element are the ones that kind of form the very, very essentials and basics of XML. And as you'll see in this couple of next lectures, is that some of these basics are actually very, very simple. So I hope some of you won't get too bored, but if you're, let's say, if this is all familiar to you or new, you can maybe already look at some of the more advanced assignments while we are going through the basics. So the main thing is that the start tag has these brackets and the element name inside, and the end tag has the slash symbol involved, and that forms it. And in some cases, you might use something called the empty elements, where the slash is actually in the end, but this is for later. And in the first assignment, I think there was this kind of a tree structure that you have to make an XML document following this tree structure. I think this slide is kind of explains rather well what it is all about. So if we also think back onto the poem example, we saw that there's something like the very first element. The very first element is always the root element, and the tree structure is drawn from this root element. So whatever goes under the root forms the structure. And it always depends on where these elements close. Because if you can see here, the day starts, day closes, month starts, month closes, year starts, year closes. They're all on the same level. So month is not inside the day element, year is not inside the day element. Everything is under this date element that closes in the end. And that means that they're all equal. They're on the same level. So the tree structure would be something like this. Everything goes under the date. But then you can think about a bit like how the tree structure would be for this one. Because if we think that the poem is the root element, it starts from there. We can see directly when we use this kind of writing conventions, we can actually visualize the structure rather nicely in this one. We see that a poem has four elements inside. It has author, date, title, and stanza. Stanza closes later, but it's inside. So if we look at the tree structure, poem has these four, and one of those, the stanza, has the line elements. So you would just under the stanza draw the line one. And that would form the tree structure for the poem. We'll discuss that still a bit later. But there's just a kind of some of these examples in the slide. So is date the child element of invoice number? We hear one no. Anyone else? Anyone else? Hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because now we can see that the header has a child element called the invoice number. The invoice number is actually on the same level as the date. It's just written in a distorted manner. The date, month, day, year, these don't go under the invoice number. It's actually, if we would align this, how could I actually put the... Does someone know how I can get the pointer? Is it there? Pen. So if we would actually move this, so it's just, this is always about the writing conventions. If you draw it, let's say, if you don't put them in there, like align them where they should be, it kind of distorts your thinking very, very fast. So as you can see, the invoice number actually closes immediately. So you could, it would be much, much better if you would write it, align it with the date. Let's have some further examples. So looking at the tree structure, if we look here the author element, is it a child element of poem? Yes. And is date element the child element of author? No. It's on the same level, so we can actually... The best way to think about this is to keep this slide in mind here. All of these are, even if... Okay, those are presented pretty badly, but the child element means that it actually is inside the element structure. So here, the day, month, year, they are all child elements of date. But as you can see, everything closes immediately afterwards. So like month comes after the day here, but it's not inside. So the day actually terminates. So there's a end tag before month starts. So month is actually not the child element of day. It's a sibling element. So keep this in mind so that there are child elements and sibling elements. So let's try again. So title, is it a child element of date? Child or sibling? Sibling, yeah, exactly. Is line the child element of stanza? Exactly, it's a child element of stanza because stanza closes only later. So everything, the lines always go under the stanza, so it's a child one. So if we, like in that one example, there was this, if you would draw it like this, it looks like that the date is actually the, the child element of author, but it actually is not, because the author element closes before the date starts. So these are the writing conventions, so that it's very important that you also learn this from the start, that like you put them in the right order in a way. And if you really have a child element, like for example, if this author would be the parent element of date and title, then you would kind of just do this. And you would put a bit of a... If there's a need to do... Okay, this doesn't make sense. Why date and title would be the child elements of author? It's not really sense-making. But in this way, when you visualize like this, you know that actually the date and title would be the child elements of authors. And title, date, they are here sibling elements. And in the grammar... Even though we have many types, this line, it's still like visualized as a number, multiple elements. But actually, in the grammar, it would be just saying that there's an element line, and it can repeat. It can occur many times. But this is also something that we'll discuss a bit later. Okay, how's it now? Does it make any sense? This, if you would be seeing this one now, is date the child element of invoice number? The final answer. No. It's a sibling element. Yeah, exactly. Is this clear for everyone? I mean, this will help you a bit in the assignments. When you see the tree structure, you can think about what is a child, what is a sibling element. And child means that actually, header is parent element of invoice number and all of the others. But if one closes directly afterwards, the ones coming after that are always siblings. It cannot be a parent then. Okay, the elements are, let's say, they are the main building blocks of XML, but it's very, very likely that when you're looking at any XML documents, you will be actually seeing content inside something that we call the attributes. They sometimes just make it much easier to put some additional information for some elements. Let's say if in an XML document we would just list particular people, their last name, their if they are married and they had a previous last name, and we would need to store this for some reason, we could use it something like in an element structure, but it might be very messy. Sometimes it just makes your life easier that you store some additional information as attributes. But again, depending on a situation. So the attributes are something as simple as if there's this star tag, the element is last name, and before it closes, if it continues with something that we call attribute, these attributes must always have this kind of a format, that they have to have the equals and then the brackets following. If this isn't followed, then it wouldn't be anymore a valid document. This is another kind of a rule that necessarily you don't have to remember yourself, because if you're using Eclipse or similar, it will always point out if you have some problems like this. But the structure is that attributes are always belong to a particular element. And in the grammar, you later on, Philip will show how you can tie the attributes to a particular element. But the key is that you include them in the start tag of an element in this manner, so that the element name, attribute name, then the equals, and then the value of the attribute. In this case, it would be the previous last surname of this Peterson. So this is the very basics about attributes, but Philip will show you some additional issues, constraints, what you can use around attributes in your XML documents. That's for not the next lecture, but the one after that one, I think. You can also have something like this in your XML documents, where you mark up maybe some comments for other developers to use. I mean, most likely, if you're working in a company or something, you might put some pointers for others to follow. And this is just to provide some extra information to the human reader. The computer doesn't really care about this. It's a kind of a standardized way just to give the XML processor to let it know that, okay, this is just some text that we humans are just sending to one another just to give some further advice or something like this. So it's in a document like this, if there's some information that you would somehow need to say about this, if there's some particular way how we want to handle the author, then we could say here that hey fellow developer and so on. So this is just a way to put some comments inside. So it's you see this happen very, very often in certain XML documents. And if you see this kind of a markup that there's the bracket, the opener, and then the exclamation mark and this dashes, it just means that it's a comment, and the processor knows that it's a comment. So that's nothing more. Okay, so then a couple of words about what actually a markup language is. So you will hear quite often that XML is something called the markup language. So it doesn't mean anything more. It just means what I just said about the like the elements, that you have kind of some kind of a tags as containers, and then you have primary content. So it just means that there's markup and primary content, and for machines, let's say for computers, for software, this kind of a markup has to be very, very strictly defined and clearly used. So we as humans, even if there are some errors, like there would be some tags, you know, missing and so on, we can still interpret it, but computers usually don't. I mean, especially if you are exchanging information between some different types of systems, it's you have to be very, very precise about this. And what markup actually is, it's just metadata that is used to include some additional information about the primary content. And that is why in XML it usually makes sense that if you had a poem, your elements aren't just called random, like something like why, and so on. It has to be something informative that others can make use of it. And markup language is something just that you can define your own markup and use the primary content around that. So if you see this sometimes discussed, that XML, what it is, it's markup language, and it just makes the differentiation between a markup and the primary content. And examples like HTML, 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 they are all markup languages like this. Start and end tags as containers that are named, that people also can understand it. There are different types of markup. I mean, in XML, we'll mostly discuss this last one, something like descriptive markup. So we just want to explain what the content is about. If it's a poem, we just want to say that, okay, this element discusses the author. Now it's something like the paragraph or something inside, and this is just how we describe it. We don't want to say how it should be presented, let's say, to a human reader or something. This is not XML's job. I mean, there are all kinds of languages that are derived and use XML documents, but that deal with how it should be presented, how it should be processed. XML itself is just to describe these properties of primary content. So it's just to put this structure. That's what XML is mainly about. So you can, of course, apply it and give it a very, very fancy outlook in a presentation and use it in many types of ways, but the basics of XML, it's just to describe the content with those informative tags, remembering this well-formedness rule, so beginning and end tag and being properly nested, and the validity rules that come later, even in this lecture. So presentational markup, if you see this discussed, it just means that like the primary content is intended for human readers, and it says something about how it should be presented. So if we think about HTML language and HTML-like documents, if you would have this kind of tags as this, sorry, pointer options, pen, give me a pen. Yay, we have a pen. So in an XML document, if I would use the same I, it wouldn't mean anything. It would be just the name of an element. But in terms of HTML, which is intended for browsers to interpret documents and give them an external presentation, it means that it puts the document in what is inside these tags. It just presents it in italics. But if you would do this in your Eclipse environment, it doesn't mean anything. If this would be called I or something similar that in HTML language, it doesn't. And if I upload this to Optima, it still just considers this as the name of an element, nothing about how it should be presented. So XML is not about the presentation of content. Then other languages come into play, and in the very, very last lectures, we then discuss more about how to use some style sheet languages around XML documents to make it a bit more fancy looking. Okay, so in XML, that doesn't matter. It's just the name of an element if we use this I. But in HTML, that would have been a particular way to present something in italics. Okay, there's something called procedural markup as well. So it's something like tells us a processing instruction for the application what to do. And this is actually what you can use in XML as well, that you use this kind of a pen. This part here, just to, it's just the means of presenting what to do with this, what goes inside these brackets. So it just means that it gives the processor the that use whatever comes inside these brackets only as character data. So present it as text. So if I would put this in an XML document, it would actually, it wouldn't interpret these brackets with the I as elements. It would just consider them as text. So this is one type of a processing instruction. So we say that C data, everything behind this is C data. It's just text. Even if you would have a full XML document inside this C data, like brackets, it would be just interpreted as text, showing all of that, like with the markup to the user. And sometimes, of course, it might make sense to use this. So, do you come up with any kind of a situation when this might be sense making, when we would use something like this, for example, for an XML document? Do you come up with any kind of a? Yes, a book about XML, or so, let's say if you would want to make some educational material about XML and put it to your website or something, that that your browser doesn't start interpreting the code that you have written. You can just use this C data and then put this opening and later the closing bracket and put your whole XML document, what you want to explain, under it, and then the processor doesn't start interpreting what is under it, because it just says that, okay, everything is behind this is just text. Don't mind the elements that usually should be treated as markup, and that you would only show the primary content. So, for example, if we would use this in the in Optima, you remember earlier that we show there was only this very, very long lines of text that came because the element, the containers weren't displayed at all. But if you would use this, it would also show those, the name of the elements.
Can I have a question?
Yeah.
As you refer to the files in Optima,
yeah. Which browser are you using? Mozilla. I think I'm using Safari, so Safari tries to interpret it, but I think Mozilla just if it sees XML document, maybe the ones who are using Mozilla, maybe you can confirm. Is it just that if there's an XML document, it doesn't start interpreting the tags immediately, so it displays it as is, while Safari tries to make sense of the document and process it, and because it doesn't give any graphics for it, it just says the name of the elements and so on. It just takes the primary content. It doesn't take the markup. So I think the Mozilla just, if it sees an XML document, it deals it as XML. So it just leaves it as is and also presents the markup.
What does the
Explorer? I think Explorer does... I'm using Safari only, but I think Explorer does the same let's see. We can actually, does somebody have an Internet Explorer? But actually I'll, just for curiosity, let's check this out. So as you can see here, we had this document. It tries to interpret it and it takes away the element. So all the markup and just leaves the primary content inside. But I think, is that the Explorer? That's Chrome?
Well, this is IE, but Chrome is the same.
Ah, okay, yeah. So in Internet Explorer, it does the same as here. So I think Mozilla, I'll also just quickly check this. But anyway, when you are like taking up those examples, and always use the save button here. I have something different in, because in my Mozilla it actually does the same. Does anyone have an explanation why it does this, or is it something like a different version of Mozilla? Or so it just says that this XML document doesn't include any external presentation, so how it should be displayed, but it still interprets it. So for me, it just shows it like this. But if you are like, but always use this. When you click on the document, you can then have this whatsoever wheel symbol, and from the object in Hallinta or similar here, always press the Tallenna and use it in your own computer. I mean, on your Notepad or Eclipse or whatever you are using. But yeah, different types of different browsers handle XML in different ways. And in later in these lectures, we also see when we are, let's say, using coming to this physical structure of XML. So how we actually link documents, how we link different types of files, and how we try to visualize that in the browser, that also has a lot of differences, which is one of the reasons why physical structure is sometimes not the, that you have to be very cautious when you use those. But I'll go to those later in this course. But just remember, XML is all about this descriptive markup. It doesn't say anything how it should be presented for the user. It just puts a kind of a structure around the documents, and usually you have the grammar around it. This is something that's called DTD that we'll discuss later, and that kind of just gives the rules that you have to follow. That, it's simple as that. If you want to present this for a user, then fine. You can use some kind of a style sheet, and that's what we'll be doing in the last demos anyways. But XML basics is just about this, that you are describing content, not saying how it should be processed or how it should be presented. And if we look at think about the HTML example, HTML as a markup language, it actually mixes up all three types of markup. So when you have in HTML something like, if this would be a XML document, if I would put this in my Eclipse tool and give this name something like a University of Jyväskylä.xml, it wouldn't try to interpret this H2 and similar anything more than text. But as you might know from HTML, all of these, most of these element names have very, very particular reason or like a function behind. So if we think about the H2, it's this header. So the browser knows that it's the header. If you have a UL and underneath the LI, it knows that it's something like a list, that you are presenting it as a list on your browser, and so on. And if you have a title, so it does. But also in HTML, it's also descriptive markup, because it tries to also say what the element is about. So in kind of a HTML, you have all of those three types. So it says to the processor how this should be, like, firstly, how it should be processed. So it's a processing instruction for the application. It gives something about the external presentation. Okay, give me a header, and you'll get a header, or like a title text in your browser. But it also describes what the content is about, like if it's a head or body, and so on. But in XML, none of this would matter. It's just names of elements. And in XML, as you might remember from a couple of slides back, XML, this as a set of rules, it doesn't like specify any element names that you might use. There are only a couple that are specified in your specification, but depending if you are making some new website for some sports clothing or whatsoever, and you would use your own element names there. You define your kind of own structures for your documents. All of that is fine. You can do whatever you kind of want. And same if you're doing something completely different. So it's XML tries to leave everything as open as possible. So that's one of the one of the main reasons why XML is so popular and why it's applied in so many different ways in different types of settings. It's only a couple of simple rules. So more or less we discussed this already. So that if a human reader should be reading the XML documents, it's of course sense making that there's some kind of some presentation around it, that you don't see the tags or you don't see just the lines of text as we now saw in Optima. And there are different types of style sheet languages. That is one option that you might use with your XML documents. For example, there's this CSS, cascading style sheets, that is commonly used with HTML. But it also can be used for XML. And in the fifth lecture, where we are discussing this something called the extensible style sheet language, it actually utilizes this CSS. So you'll become familiar with some of the basics in CSS as well, as some processing instructions that this XSL language kind of gives. Last year, some of the students were a bit puzzled because many of them haven't used any kind of done anything in HTML or similar, so also the CSS and everything was new to them. So we tried to keep the assignments as close as we can to the basics, and in the lectures we also try to show, let's say, quick workarounds for when you are giving an external presentation for your documents, because I mean this is not the key focus of XML. It's much more important when we are giving structures for documents, when different type of systems exchange lots of data between themselves. That we give it a kind of a external presentation on a website. That's only one very very small example and not a very fundamental reason for using XML. So we try to keep this part quite to the minimum, and we hope that it's not too overwhelming this. When you are using this extensible style sheet language than in the last demo session. But we try to support with that as much as we can. But the main thing is that if you think about that, you have this basic XML document, this poem whatsoever. The good thing about it is compared to HTML is that we don't limit how it should be presented. Just think about nowadays I have different types of devices with me. Sometimes I use a Mac, sometimes my smartphone, sometimes I display something from Samsung TV or something. But just think about it, if you have the same basic document and you have just the kind of a different types of style sheet defined for different types of devices, you aren't limiting how it should be visualized for a human being. But if we have something HTML or something similar that tells immediately that always present it in this way, it's not as flexible. I mean, it leaves less options for presenting it to the human reader. And this XSL, so that you give the kind of a style sheet and then you kind of transform the output to different types of devices. This is one part of the final demo session, but we actually will keep it rather simple. But the main thing is that the same document can, in many cases, serve very, very different types of purposes, and with XML, you don't limit it to only one type of presentation. You are just describing your content with these tags. You are doing it in a well-formed manner, start and end tag, properly nested, you're fine. Then somebody else can give it even some completely different person, different organization, different whosoever might give it some kind of a style sheet and present it the information for a different purpose. So this is one of the cool things about XML. But of course, XML is only one part. When you're talking about web development or similar, I mean, all developers usually have their own preferences and different types of languages. methods whatsoever they are using. So XML is one way to go and can be applied in some areas. But of course, the main thing is or where it's most usable is the data interexchange between software and systems. And this more or less gives the same kind of a thing, that you have just kind of the XML document, you have some kind of a style sheet, then the processing instructions, how it should be dealt with, and then you might have different types of devices and different types of coding languages that give it some kind of an output that you might be using. So in our example, we'll focus mainly on this just very basics on the HTML in the very last time. So again, some of these ones. Do you think this is okay? And if you don't think it's okay, why it's not okay? What do you think?
Apart from looking at the horrible, it's fine.
Yeah, it's completely fine, but I mean, these are writing conventions. Just think about that somebody has left something like this for you and you have to make sense of it. Like, it's terrible. I mean, but these are, again, writing conventions. Nothing like it's well-formed. It's the structure is okay. You aren't breaking down it at any point. But it's just that it's not visualized in a good way. It's very hard to make any sense out of it. Okay, this is actually a new thing, but is this okay? Anyone want to guess why it's not okay? Yeah, so XML is case sensitive. So if you are using a capital letter and in the end tag, not a capital letter, it's a different element. So this would break down immediately. So just remember XML is case sensitive. If you are using author with capital A, use it also in the end tag. So I can also show this in the... So if we would do this, okay, Eclipse tells immediately that there's something wrong with it. And in Eclipse, if you're using this, right-click the document and press validate. It, even though it says validate, but it actually checks also the well-formedness. So if there's something wrong with it, it tells you. Then you just click OK. And then it says if there's some problem. Yeah, and here it says that in the errors that the element type date must be terminated by the matching end tag date. So if it's a capital letter, then it's wrong. So this is also one of the things that, okay, if you're using some particular tool for development, these are quite obvious because the tool will tell you, but try to keep it in mind. XML is case sensitive. It's a different element if you change even one letter from capital to another. Another one. Is this fine? What do you think? We hear no and yes. So let's say if it would be something else than XML, it might be okay, but in XML there's this, if you remember a couple of slides back, it's very, very precise that if we include an attribute, it always must be presented in the same way, so that there's we have an element title, the attribute author, and then the equals, and it must have the brackets, so where you present the value of the attribute. So Edgar Allan Poe is not inside the brackets, and this would be terminated. I'll demonstrate this as well. Okay, in this document we don't have any attributes, but we have in the folder also this is something like invoice that you might get from your electricity company whatsoever. We have a there included a invoice with like including attributes and one element version. So as you can see here, it's a lot and lot of elements. So an invoice that has a header section, what kind of gives just the invoice number, when it's the payment is due, who the bill is sent to, and so on. And then you have a like an item section here that tells what the bill is all about. Okay, this is an element version, but I just quickly made an attribute version just to demonstrate that in some cases you might not want to put everything as elements. So sometimes you might not want to even visualize everything. Let's say in the header, but you want to not in the header, but in the actual bill that you print, you actually might want to save some information about the bill, about the customer or similar for other purposes. And in this case, I've used this same information with some attributes. And remember when you are including attributes in your document, in here we have the header element that is actually the child element of invoice, and the header closes here. And when we have the start tag, we can include the attributes in the following way. Actually, they're writing conventions, this should be better like this. But if we, from this attribute invoice number, we delete this, let's see what the... what the tool says. Yeah, it says that the open quote is expected for attribute invoice number, so you should have this one. It always depends a bit on what kind of a tool you are using, and is it in the start with made for like editing XML, because in some cases it might be, I think for Notepad++ it's aware of this kind of a things as well. But that's why it's very important that you always use this World Wide Web Consortium validator online, because those are the people who created XML in the first phase. Sometimes you see something like XML World Wide Web Consortium Schools. It's actually a different organization. It's not the same one. So they have their own validator, and we don't recommend to use it because it doesn't notice all of some things like this. Because in a real environment, a real life situation, something like this would be a problem. But the World Wide Web Consortium Schools, which is a different organization, they haven't been taking all of these kind of things into account. So please use for validating your documents in the assignments, also always the link that we have given in the slides. So just to be on the safe side. Is this rather clear to you in an XML document how you can include attributes to your elements, or the purpose for doing so? I mean, purposes can be multifold in a way, so it always depends on the situation. But is this a way of presenting and declaring them? Is it clear?
For me, it's slightly
clear. Why to use attributes in the first phase? So, okay, again, it depends a bit. There's nothing wrong with this invoice version over here. I mean, it's still sense making. But depending on, let's say, what your organization does, and what they want to, it might be something that if you always, let's say, print out, okay, if you're printing out always the XML, this invoice in a particular manner, you always print the element. Everything is in elements, it always comes in the print. But sometimes you might have also some information that you store about the bill for some, let's say, for a different unit of your organization or similar. You might everything that is included in the attributes is there to give some extra information internally, but it shouldn't be presented to the outside world. Let's say what is in attributes you want to keep internal, what is in elements that's publicly available or something like this. It always depends on the situation. So, but that's I'm not sure if that's a very good example, but I mean it's a way of presenting information and storing information and when something is sense making. But
for public it's not easy,
Yeah, that's good. That could be. So I could do something like that. It presents like prints out the bill, everything that's in the element content, but it doesn't print what's inside the attribute content. That could be. So let's say that the attributes are just meta information to be used internally. Something about the customer, something about the bill, something about that another unit might use in our organization, but it's not important. It's not something that the customer needs to know or something like this. But that's kind of a one example. But again, it depends on the context and what you are working with. I mean, the more complex situations and settings you are working with, normally the more complex kind of your data models whatsoever are, and then it might be sense-making that you kind of make some boundaries on where you present and how you structure your documents. But of course, if it's a very simple example, like an invoice or a poem, you might not use any attributes or things like this. But I think we'll come, for example, to some practical examples for using XML as a metadata language for these learning materials. So from one of the projects that we have been working with Philip. And there's a very, very particular way of showing information and like that multiple, let's say, organizations and developers use worldwide. And it always has to be in a particular way, because if it's not in the particular way, the format breaks down, and someone who's let's say the end user who's wanting to access a particular learning material would just get an error sign or something that couldn't access it. So, but we'll come to those examples a bit later. But also in the, let's say, in the more like complicated settings, sometimes what the kind of the document type definition that comes in the follow-up lectures, it's a very, very simple way for like putting restrictions to your XML documents and saying what should be under it. But let's say in a more complicated environment or complicated setting, you need something more developed, and there's some XML languages that are meant for that purpose, and XML schema is one that will be later in our course one of the examples. And there the use of attributes, for example, comes more into, you have more natural like choices why you're using attributes. But is this clear, this how you include an attribute in your element? An attribute is just a kind of a meta information about the element. That's the...
Where you put it.
I mean, of course, here, if we have just an XML document without the kind of a grammar that tells what should go under it, we haven't gone to discuss the DTD yet, but okay, here's an example with the grammar. So the first part there's the doc type and then poem and then the starting tag, and on line 8, it stops. This is the grammar for our document, for our poem. It says precisely what should go under it. And if in this grammar we specify that the element title must have certain types of attributes, then in our XML document we cannot put it elsewhere. We always have to then, but this is again, in two lessons from now, I think Philip will discuss about this, how you make the DTD and how you include the attributes, because this example doesn't have any. Let's see if I have a... Maybe here. Okay, this is a bit more evolved document type definition, so the grammar for it. So this at least means exactly an attribute, and it goes under the element img. So it belongs to that one. The attribute is called like CRC, but we'll go later into this how these are described. And actually now we are having here a bit more evolved, because it has something called entities that we only kind of bypass quite fast in these lectures. But the grammar tells where the attribute must be. And if you are, let's say, if you're working in an organization, you're putting some structure for your technical documentation in a factory or something, you cannot randomly, of course, then go to your XML document and put attributes under any element. It must be always in the in the place where it belongs. But the grammar, which is the DTD, it says where it has to be. Does that answer your question? But again, we go later into that one, and we go to very different types of attributes. Like here we have in attributes, we have actually some graphics. So, but, and then you must have in your DTD a particular way of introducing an attribute that is something else than text. And for that reason, we go to the physical structure of XML, where you can include different types of graphics and so on to your documents. But again, this is for later in the course. But right now, we are just interested in this how to declare attributes in no matter under which element it would be. But in the real life situation, you have some structure, and you just don't randomly go and put this, let's say, under the here under the street or something like this. It wouldn't really make sense. Okay, so from this one. The Edgar Allan Poe must have the brackets, otherwise the processing would be terminated and the XML document wouldn't anymore be valid. Try this one, the tree structure, the siblings, the parents. Does this match? What do you think? Yeah, it matches. There are different types of conventions for tree structure. Is whether you always, if there are multiple, let's say these lines, that if you present multiple lines also under the stanza as many times, or do you just show that there's this one line element and it can take place many times. But this is an actual representation of the document and it matches. So if you are getting a bit more comfortable into this tree structure and thinking about the XML document, the first assignment will be quite straightforward, I think, for you to write. Okay, then we go to the validating XML document. Just very briefly before we end the lecture, this document type definition, the R grammar comes to play, what we showed. It's something like that gives just the rules for your XML document. It can be in the XML document, but in real life, usually you have it stored somewhere separately, because when you have a separate document that defines the kind of a rules restrictions for your all kinds of XML documents that you might have, it's much easier to modify. Let's say that if we would have 1,000 of poems, and if we would always have the DTD included in the XML document inside of it, we would always have to for each 1,000 of documents make the same adjustments. But if we have just an external document with the DTD and we link from our XML document to that one, we make the changes here and all the upcoming documents just comply with it, just link to it. And that's more or less what the document type definition is about. So it just gives the rules restrictions for your XML documents. You either store it locally in the XML document or externally in a separate file, and usually you store it in a separate file, but in your assignments, when you're validating your documents, you have it inside the XML document so that the validator online can check it carefully against it. But that's also in the guidelines of the assignments, that you will use this internal or local DTD files in the assignments. So DTD gives just the grammar. The grammar for your own language. So just remember, XML is just a set of rules to create other languages. This poem is one language. This invoice is one language. If you are making something for whatsoever, new socks or something like that, and create a DTD for that, you are creating a new language for describing socks. And this is exactly what XML is about. It's extensible. You can create any kind of a language for your own under it. Make restrictions and so on for it. So just to define your documents. And this is actually what the internal DTD would look like. So it's just that it's included in your XML document. So as you can see, what goes under or above this note is the DTD. And what goes under it is the XML document that complies, that follows this the structures that you have set for your document. This is a very, very simple example, but this is what XML is more or less about. Philip will later talk about those what in the heck those PC data whatsoever means and how you do this and like element node, and then you have under like a comma many types of element names and what this actually mean, but that's later. And if we would have an external DTD, we would just point to it like something like this doc type node system, and we give where it should be, where you can find it in the file system. For if it would be mynode.dtd, it just means that it's the DTD is in the same, let's say, folder where your XML document is. But you can give it a complete URL and it finds it as well. Okay, before we end this lecture, just to remember that there's two sets of rules for XML documents. Remember these and you will go far. Well-formedness rules, element must have a beginning and end tag, must be properly nested. That's the first thing. And validity rules are intended for XML documents that have this DTD, grammar inside. And if a document is valid, it complies both of these rules. These well-formedness rules and validity rules. It matches the validity rules that it must match the DTD. If it doesn't match your grammar, your document, then it's not valid. And this is where Notepad++ is wrong in a way. So it only checks for the well-formedness, for the number one rules. But yeah, that's more or less it. I think those we'll discuss anyways later. So that's a couple of readings for you that you should check. And see you next week on Tuesday. Have a nice weekend. Don't party too hard.